I'm Natalie.
And I'm Gerald.
Welcome to the Sweet Run Podcast.
Conversations with local passionate runners, because to run a city is to know a city.
Friends, get ready for an exhilarating conversation. It is our pleasure to welcome Kate Gunderson to the Sweet Run Podcast. Kate is a mechanical and aerospace engineer currently attending the National Test Pilot School in Mojave, California. Okay, not only does Kate have an empowering and amazing career, she is also a Boston Marathon qualifying marathoner. Kate ran a 3:24 at CIM in December 2022, and she is currently training for the Fargo Marathon on June 1st. One of the things that I really love about Kate is that she has a passion for increasing female participation in engineering, and she authors a blog aimed at empowering women to confidently thrive in STEM fields. You guys, Kate's amazing, and I love this conversation. She's so inspiring, and as the mom of two girls, we need more women in the world like Kate. In the second half of our conversation, we get to talk about where Kate lives in and around the Mojave Desert area of California. Kate lays it out for us. She gives us really creative places on where to go running, where to dine out, things that you have to see, really cute places to stay, and so much more. I have lived in California for a very long time, and all of these places I've not even heard of before. So I'm really excited to explore more of my home state. Kate is a gem. Let's just get right into our conversation with Kate Gunderson. Kate Gunderson, welcome to the Sweet Run Podcast. We are beyond. The whole family is excited to talk to you.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm really excited to chat with you.
Yeah, you already have two fans before we even got rolling, man. Between my daughter and the STEM and my son and the flying, I was like, okay, you've got fans.
Yes, I know. For everyone listening, if you are not following Kate, you have to go right now. We'll give you 2 seconds to go and follow her at The Plane Kate. That's Plane. Your Instagram, I was saying, is beyond inspirational. I just, every time you post, I'm just like, oh my gosh, what is she? Where is she? What is she doing now? We'll talk about all that. But first, I want to talk about you and, okay, so I wrote this down. I wrote notes because I wanted to make sure that I had this right. But okay, so Kate, you're a civilian engineer currently attending Test Pilot School. Is that right? Okay.
Yes, you got that right.
I made notes. Tell us about what your amazing career is, what you're doing right now.
Okay, so something that I didn't know until I went down this journey is that engineers go to test pilot school. I thought only pilots went to test pilot school. So if you think about like the movie Top Gun and how like Top Gun is this really elite school for like very specialized training in the military, test pilot school is sort of the same thing, but for learning how to test and evaluate aircraft and their systems. So I'm learning how to test aircraft. I'm not learning how to fly them. So engineers and pilots both go to school together because they work so closely together in the real world. And so we both need to be able to talk the same talk and understand like when the pilot's flying the airplane and I'm either in the back or on the ground in a control room, I completely understand what he or she is experiencing because I've done that too in school. So it's pretty cool. Even without a pilot's license, you get to go up in airplanes with an instructor and fly the airplane and try out the different test techniques to learn how to test them. So it's pretty unique and interesting, but rigorous experience.
Nice. Now, are you a pilot, you know, private pilot yourself at all?
No, I actually am on a wait list. I'm going to start my private pilot's license next month. But yeah, I have been wanting to do it for probably my entire life, but it's just been a matter of finding the time and the money to align at the same time to do that. So I'm gonna be starting soon. I started the ground school portion, but yeah.
Let's dig into this a little more. So how your job, what you do, how does that help the pilot?
Yeah, so well, the engineer has kind of a unique role because we're kind of like managing the entire team. So we do all kinds of things from like we need to manage like and be able to talk to the engineer, the other engineers, like the subject matter expert type engineers that are really in the weeds on like technical subjects. So we need to know a broad range of subjects and be able to like really talk the talk of what they're explaining to us and understand the broad overview. And then we need to be able to chat with the pilots and do mission planning and stuff like that. And then we also need to, and actually like understand if we're going to be able to execute the test in the way we want to. And then we have to be able to talk to maintainers who work on the airplanes and that kind of thing. Instrumentation engineers. So really like there's a lot of moving pieces when you're talking about testing a complex system like an aircraft or a spacecraft or anything like that. So we organize that whole team. We write the test. We can sometimes write the test plan. We go and execute the test. We write the test cards to make sure the test flows well. And then we collect the data, analyze it. And then, we might be presenting it to like high up, managers or, high up officials in the government or the military and stuff like that. So really you learn how to, one of the biggest things that they talk about is that we learn how to have test and how to have integrity. So even when you're getting pressures from project managers, or program managers, that are pushing you to like, okay, this aircraft has to go fly soon. And you're like, if they talk about being able to call somebody's baby ugly. So you're not swayed by like other people's opinions. You're telling it in a very subjective way what you're seeing, if that makes sense.
Who do you work for? A branch of the military or who exactly do you work for?
Well, so before I left here, or before I started at the school I'm at now, I was working for the government. I was at NASA's Johnson Space Center. So I worked as an engineer there for 4 years. And then I had to leave that job to take this fellowship that I have now. And right now it's called the National Test Pilot School. And it's a civilian, it's the only civilian test pilot school in the United States. There's a few in the world, but there are really only like, I don't know, I think it's like seven, like, highly recognized test pilot schools in all the world. And so this is a civilian school, but most of our students are actually foreign military because the US military test pilot schools only have so much room for foreign military. So we fill that gap. And then there are some other civilian students as well that come from companies, you know, like, I don't know, I'm just going to throw up like Airbus or like Gulfstream or something like that. But anyway, I work for the school as a graduate assistant. So they're basically to let me go through this year-long rigorous $1 million course. In order to do that, I also owe them like 2 years of working for the school as a graduate assistant. And that's like kind of how we work out the agreement.
So when you're done with the fellowship, what is your next step? Like, where would you like to work after that?
That's a great question. So ever since I was in second grade, I've wanted to be an astronaut. And while that's my ultimate goal, I've always like, if that never happened, I wanted to work at NASA. And I did that. And so now that I've done that, I would love to go back and work at NASA, but I also want to see what else is out there. So for the first time in my entire life, I don't have like the exact idea of what I want to do next. So I'm trying to kind of have an open mind because there really are so many opportunities. Like having graduated from a program like this, you kind of have a lot of opportunities to go where you want to go. And so I'm kind of trying to decide what that is. And I don't know if I want to do like more space side or more aviation side.
So you're in a school to help you. And this is because I just don't know any other test pilots. Like, you're helping Chuck Yeager, right? From way back when, test the new plane, and you're gathering data and feeding it back to the people that make the wing or the electrical system or whatever systems in an airplane.
Yeah. So those people like would all be sitting in a control room on the ground. Mm-hmm. And if it was a single seat aircraft, like the one Chuck Yeager was in, then yeah, I would be on the ground as well in that control room. And I'd be kind of like leading that team. And I might be, if I was the test conductor, I would be the one person talking to him while he's flying. And I'd be responsible for, that whole team. And then usually what they do is everybody in that room has the authority to call knock it off. So if you see a safety issue or like one of those engineers sees something on their screen that is out of limits, then they can call knock it off and I relay that to him. So, yeah, it's just you're kind of managing that whole team.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, when you're in that position, you're working and you're talking to a pilot, like, what's going on in your head? Like, are you nervous? Like, do you, because I imagine
you have to have a calm demeanor because you're talking, you know, this person is flying this plane. And how does that all, what's going through your mind?
Oh, well, I haven't really had like a situation that's been like too terrifying because I'm, you know, in general, in a learning environment, it's pretty controlled. But yeah, they definitely teach us to have like, they teach us to learn to have a cool demeanor in a tough situation. So for instance, one of our flights, we had like a normal flight, we collected data and everything, but then the test pilot instructor threw in like an emergency situation. So we were coming into land and he said, oh, one of your engines just basically stopped working. It flamed out or something, or you have an engine fire or something. So anyway, we had to go then. And as the engineer, I wanted the pilot to be able to keep flying. So I took the responsibility of looking in the emergency procedures to see what I could do possibly to help him in that situation. So we really are trained to like think calmly and logically in those situations and like be contributing, like being able to contribute as a team member in that situation. So yeah, we really learn in school how to like how to do all that.
Nice.
Yeah, that is so fascinating. Yeah.
Which is a good skill to have kind of anywhere in your life, really, if you think about it.
Yes. Yeah. And I love these conversations across people's, you know, vastly different careers, because the one thing in common is the running, and particularly with a marathon or any other longer distance, or I guess really any distance, you know, how have you seen running and the mindset you have to have there help with the career or things that you're taking away from flight test school? Mm-hmm. Has it applied to, okay, how do I manage myself through this 26.2 miles?
It's funny you ask that, because in my interview for test pilot school, I actually brought up running and I talked about the discipline that it requires. One of the things I love the most about marathon running and is the training, because I think it involves a really great amount of discipline and I really value that asset that it brings into my life. I keep looking up here because I have the book Endurance by Scott Kelly. He's the astronaut that went to space for a year. And I always think about the intersection between endurance in spaceflight and endurance in running, and how like we do the hard things because they're hard, because they challenge us to be better. And I think that relates to both things.
Mm-hmm. This is interesting, and I wonder if you find this to be true with your experience. I find that as endurance athletes, particularly marathoners, when you go on a job interview, right, and they start asking you questions, and then you get to the part about running and you tell them about that, it pretty much seals the deal. I feel like you can always close the deal on getting a job when you start talking about being a marathoner and what you've done and what it takes to conquer the training. They're kind of like, okay, if you can do that, you can do this job. Do you find that to be true?
I guess that's the only probably job interview I've ever used that, but it worked really well. but I think it's true. It says a lot about you when you have, I mean, you don't just wake up one morning and run a marathon. It takes a lot of concerted effort ahead of time. And like I said, discipline, dedication, and mental toughness, really. And I think a lot of those skills translate really well to, you know, I think about how the first year I ever qualified for Boston, it's the year it went virtual. And I remember being so disappointed. And this is the discipline that I was talking about in that interview, is I could have easily just given up and said, I'll just wait for another time. But I decided to run the virtual race. And in part, I did that, and I was able to do that because I had my running community rally around me and organize a little, you know, I had at least one person running with me the entire 26.2 miles around Houston, Texas, when I should have been running Boston. And so I think really it teaches you also about the fact that you can be an individual and like have that discipline and mental toughness and everything, but you're made even better by a team. And you wouldn't think of running necessarily as a team sport, but I really think it can be.
Absolutely. I agree with you.
Yeah.
I'm so fascinated about you saying that you want to be an astronaut. So will you tell us a little bit about like what goes into that? Like, okay, I want to be an astronaut. Now what?
Yeah, well, that's tough because if everyone knew the secret recipe, everybody who wanted to be an astronaut would be, right? You know, every astronaut I've ever talked to tells me how lucky they are to be where they are. I think that there are an endless number of incredibly talented and deserving people in the world that could easily be selected to be astronauts. But, you know, some of the things I've seen in the people that I've met that are astronauts and are really great astronauts are, well, first of all, you have to be somebody that you want to spend at least 6 months in space with in a little, like basically a small house, or maybe even smaller. So in general, they're all like have really great personalities and, are great team players. If you're talking about like the actual requirements, it's kind of surprising. They just, like a couple years ago, made the requirements a little harder, but previously it was just a bachelor's degree in basically a STEM related field, or you, were basically a military test pilot essentially. But then a couple years ago, they raised the requirement to now you have to have a master's degree in a STEM field. So that's the basic requirement. And then I'm trying to think, I haven't thought about this in a little while. There's an astronaut application coming out soon, I think. So I need to start getting ready. But so that, and then what's the other one? Oh, you need to have like a couple years of work experience in the related field. But besides that, like, it's really not like earth shattering, the requirements. Other than like the pilot stuff, you know, that's all. So they choose either like the mission specialist type astronauts that are like scientists and engineers and doctors and all that. And then there's the basically pilot astronauts. So, but yeah, I always suggest if somebody wants to be an astronaut, the starting place really, you know, when I was started thinking about college, it's like a STEM field would always be a good option. And then, you know, every astronaut, you know, I told you, they say how lucky they are. So really what I've seen and heard is that, you know, chasing your, like doing what you're passionate about. And then, because so few people actually become astronauts, it's important to like be doing what you love anyway. And if it works out, that's great. But like, I think NASA really likes to see people who are passionate about what they're already doing, because that in general is going to lead you to be good at the career you're doing. And that will make you shine in that as an expert in that field. If that makes sense.
Yeah. It sounds like a lot of luck goes into the people that are chosen to be astronauts. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you know, and as much as you may say, oh, it's not earth-shatteringly hard. I don't think I haven't seen NASA post a job on ZipRecruiter either. You know, I think that's really, you know, you're not going to go to Craigslist and look at the job section and see, you know, NASA hiring. I'm like, yeah, no. I think it may be not so difficult for people already at a certain level of, you know, excellence in academia. And like you said, with a high degree of passion for their area of science, right? Yeah. That applies. So, once we get there, then it may be like, okay, this is kind of semi-normal, right? For this handful of people who ever get to do it.
Well, so when Kate becomes an astronaut, we can say she was on the Sweet Run podcast.
That would be the dream.
Yes.
Yes.
Dream big. It's definitely going to happen. I think, you know, you sound so passionate about what you're doing, and I love that. I wanted to ask you, like, how does running, like, you know, how do you find the time to fit it in, like, with your training and all of that? Like, do you have a very big, long work day?
Yeah. So something I learned in college was the importance of setting priorities. And my parents will say I'm not very good at it, because I always want to do everything. So I have a challenge of trying to fit everything in, and, you know, packing maybe too much in some days. But for me, I always prioritize working out or going on my run basically the second I wake up, if I can. So right now, because I have to be at school at 7, I'm waking up at 4 a.m. to get that run in, which most people are like, whoa. And I would have said the same thing a few years ago, but I think I've become a morning person. But I really find that if you wait till the end of the, if, if I wait till the end of the day, it's most likely that something else is going to pull up my attention that's going to make it really hard to keep that a priority. So I prioritize the things that are important to me. So that's not number one running, but running is up there, right? So every morning, wake up and run. And then I kind of, you know, sometimes I have to prioritize it above other things. But like when I was in class, so like I said, I switch between class and working and that kind of thing at the school. So when I'm like in class and it's very rigorous, there might be days where I have to forego the run, unfortunately. And I've had to come to terms with that. It can be kind of challenging for me to to give that up, but I think, or maybe, you know, the run is just a little shorter, but I've come to realize that, you know, some days you have to prioritize other things, and that's just the way it is. But I actually talked to a career coach recently, and she told me that it's important to keep running when you're very stressed and busy, because it's kind of like if you have that fight or flight response because you're working really hard at something or you're struggling at something, the last thing you want to do is just stop running because you have no way to get that fight or flight response to go away. So I was like, oh, that's really good to keep in mind whenever I'm in class, is that even if I can only get in like a 20 or 30 minute run, that might be better than nothing. So.
Oh, that's such a good, and it's so true. I find that too. Like if I'm stressed out or have a lot going on in my life, but it's like, don't give up the running because that helps you, like,
keep you sane.
When my family, if I'm like being a little crabby, they're like, have you been on your run today?
I'm like, oh yeah, let me do that. Now, okay, 4 a.m. going on runs. What does that look like? Are you running outside by yourself on the treadmill? What's going on?
Well, okay. So when I was living in Houston, that's the first time I ever ran with like a club, and I grew to just absolutely cherish my mornings with my running club. I absolutely loved it. It was such a great community. And then moving here kind of like wrecked my world, because now I'm like running alone most days, which it's been really awesome because my boyfriend has started waking up a couple days a week at 4 a.m. to run with me, which was very sweet of him. Mm-hmm. And on the days where I'm running too fast, he'll bike. But it's challenging because I live in a smaller town. That's you. I live in a smaller town that can sometimes feel a little like less safe than I'd like. So that can be a challenge. But I am running outside because I just don't. I call it the treadmill. I don't enjoy the treadmill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah,
I hear you.
Yeah,
hear
you. It's nice to be outside. Yeah. But yeah. Oh, how nice that you have a partner who is out there with you, whether it's running or mm-hmm. biking. I mean, that's priceless. I
know. Now, was he a runner as well, or have you dragged him in?
No, the poor guy. He's like, well, it's good quality time together because he knows that every morning I'm spending an hour running. But he's in the Air Force, so he has to stay somewhat fit for the fitness test. Okay. So it's a benefit for him too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, okay, Kate, are you training for anything right now, or just training for life? What's going on with your running?
Yeah, so I think for the past couple of years, I've done 2 marathons a year, which basically ends up being me training the whole year long. So this year, since Boston happened in April, has been my like off time for the first time in a while. But I found out I missed Boston by 22 seconds. So yeah, if I had run the last marathon, just like, you know, 1 second faster per mile. But yeah, so now I'm going to run the Fargo Marathon in June.
Okay. Tell
us
about
home, right? That's, or not, maybe not Fargo.
But. Fargo. I'm from West Fargo. But yeah, my boyfriend makes fun of me because my accent will come out. But yes, I'm from North Dakota, and I just thought it would be fun to like do the hometown race. I've never done it before, so
yeah.
I've heard really good things about the Fargo Marathon. Like I hadn't, for some reason, it's like popping up. I'm seeing it like as a like spring marathon option. So. What's going on with Fargo? There's some good things happening there.
Well, I don't know why. I've heard the same thing. And it's funny. I think I've just heard it's a really well put on race. And they have like, you know, people playing music along the route and lots of people cheering. And it's pretty flat. And I actually have a friend from Houston who went and ran the race a couple of years ago. And she said it was really well done. So I'm excited about that.
Nice.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, it was. I remember when we met in Boston this past year, and that was so fun. And So now you said you missed the BQ by
20.
No, I BQ'd and I got a PR at CIM last year, or what was it? Not this last December, but this December before, but I missed the cutoff.
Ah.
Yeah. I had like a 5-minute buffer, but it wasn't enough.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I know every year they change it. And so you just don't know, like, you need 5 minutes, 7 minutes.
I know, it's wild.
10 minutes.
I know. Yeah.
So, okay, Kate. So now how did you get into running?
Yeah. So I, for a while, like maybe 9 months, was in ROTC. In college. So that's like the kind of like what you join if you want to be in the military. And I knew I had to start running for that. So I kind of started jogging every now and then. And then at some point somebody dragged me into, it was my friend that's in the Air Force now. She convinced me to do the Marine, or it was the, no, it was the, Navy Air Force half marathon, I think it is, in DC. So we did that. And then I know who also, my other running friend, she convinced me to run my first marathon. So it was kind of all like got me from there. And then, you know, that same friend then convinced me I could Boston qualify. And yeah, it's just been ongoing since then. So yeah, I started in like late in college.
Yeah, be okay. Careful of the company you mm-hmm. keep.
Yeah. I was like, you're crazy. I could never run a half marathon. Oh, you're crazy. I could never run a marathon.
And now look at
you. Now, I know. How many marathons have you run?
8.
Okay.
8. Yeah. That's a lot of marathons.
To stack them up. Yeah. I like that. What was the most fun or most rewarding that you've done so far?
I would say Boston. I never expected the emotional part of it to be as huge as it was. It felt so special to be running such a historic race that I think it was more symbolic for me than anything, because when I moved to Houston, I needed to make friends. And the friend that told me I could run a marathon said, why don't you join a running club? And I looked on the website online and it said like it was like, I don't know, 80% males or something. And I was like, where am I going to find any girlfriends around here? Well, I showed up and they made me introduce myself and they said, like, tell us one of your running goals. And I remember thinking, I can't believe I'm going to have the audacity to say this, but I'm going to tell them that I want to Boston qualify. And I kind of said it in a kind of meek way. And not even a year later, because I attribute it to the fact that I started running track workouts with them. I had never done track workouts before. A few months later, I literally Boston qualified. And I remember just, you know, whether it takes you a couple of races or it's your first race or your 12th race or whatever, years and years before you Boston qualify, when you are able to finally do that, it feels so special just to even like BQ, and then to be able to go there and run the race, and the same race that people have run for so many years, it just feels so special. I'm sure you completely understand, but
yeah, I do. It is very special, and I feel like that whole weekend, the city just like comes alive, and people are just, and everyone feels so proud to be there, and like it's like you just turn everywhere you look, there's someone that has a different story on how they got to Boston, and mm-hmm. you know, yeah, it's very yeah. special. Mm-hmm. You ran the Boston Marathon in 2022 in 3:26:30. Is that in that's your PR?
That sounds right. No, I BQ. I mean, I had a PR at CIM. So yeah, not 2023, 2022. I'm losing track of my years because of COVID now.
Okay, wait, so then, yeah, you ran Boston in April of 2022, and then you ran CIM that December.
Yeah, that's what it was. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you remember your time in CIM?
Yeah, it was 3:24 something, maybe 53 or okay. something. I was nice. Trying to get 3:20, which I had, like, that was, I tried to get a 3:20 at Chicago, and it was, like, really hot that year. I think it was 2021. And then I was like, I'm going to do it at CIM, and then I was like, nope, I'm not going to do it at CIM. So I need to like work up. I think it's self-confidence. I need to work up the self-confidence mm-hmm. to get a 3:20. But I finally hired a coach for this starting on February 1st. So we'll see.
Nice. Okay, good. I was going to ask you like, how, you know, what your training is looking like for Fargo. When is, what's the date of that race?
It's June 1st.
June 1st. Okay. You have time.
The training block is.
Yeah.
I'm doing my base right now, 40 miles a week. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Okay. You're getting that 320 or sub 320 on June 1st. It's coming. We're putting it out there.
Be great. At hometown marathon. And that's the one. Yes.
Yeah. It should be cold, I assume.
Right. Oh yeah, what is the weather like in Fargo around the beginning of June?
I think it's kind of hit or miss. Some years, I remember like some years during prom, you know, in like April, May, they're getting snow. So whoa. It's possible, but I think it'll be chilly, but I hopefully not too crazy. Probably like, you know, I think of like the 40s, high mid 40s as like perfect running weather. I'm really hoping for something like that. We'll see.
How long have you lived? So you moved from Fargo when to California?
Well, that's a whole story in and of itself, because I grew up, born and raised Fargo, West Fargo, whatever, North Dakota. And then I never like lived anywhere else until I went away to college. And then because of college, I had like moved all over the country for internships. So I went to school in Rochester, New York. And then I lived like literally every part of the country, and then moved to Houston once I was done with graduate school in Atlanta, and then Houston I moved to California. So I moved to California in January 2022.
I want to know, what's the deal with like either East Fargo versus West Fargo?
Oh,
because you made it a very clear point to say West Fargo. And I'm like, okay, is there some like, you know, some rivalry beef going on? Crosstown rivalry.
Oh yeah,
that we don't know about.
You know it. You know it. No, that's really funny. You know, East Fargo is actually Minnesota. But yes, right. West Fargo and Fargo. I was always reminded as a kid. My brother played football, and he always reminded me there's a big difference between West Fargo and Fargo. So West Fargo is like, you know, 30,000 people or something, and like Fargo is like the big city. It's right next door. It has like 200,000. I don't know. More people, but in like the grand scheme of like everything, North Dakota has so many fewer people than any other. Like, if you think about the fact that I lived in Houston and my whole state of North Dakota had like 600,000 people, you're just like,
yeah,
that's crazy. Yeah. I mean, I don't even know how many people are in LA County.
Oh, yeah,
like millions. Like, yeah. What, 4 million people in the county, maybe?
I think 10 in the county and 5 in the city.
Oh, yeah, that's probably right. So
that's wild.
Somewhere like North Dakota. But that brings me to think, okay, Kate, when we asked you to come on the show, I was like, you're going to come on and talk about Mojave, where you live in California. But I didn't know that you were from Fargo, North Dakota. So now here's the thing. We've never done this before.
Ooh.
You can pick.
Player's choice.
Which city? Because we've never had anybody on from Fargo, which could be very cool. We've never had anybody on to talk about Mojave, the Mojave Desert. So this is something new. You can choose which town. Oh, this conversation is so good. It's hard to take a step away from it. We want to pause for just a moment for two quick reasons. If you are looking to take your running to the very next level, whether it's a marathon, half marathon, 5K, 10K, hit me up. I am a certified running coach. I have been running my entire life. I've had some incredible mentors along the way, and I've studied, and I love this sport inside and out. I have a roster of athletes, and I'd love to chat with you about joining our team. So you can find me in two ways. You can go to Instagram and DM me at NatRunsFar, or you can send me an email, natalie@natrunsfar.com. We also want to shout out our sponsor, HydraPack. They are passionate about hydration. They're passionate about athletes, and I'm really happy to be working with them. I'm training for a marathon right now. I'm using their Temple bottles, which I love. They're soft, they're flexible, they're easy to use, and easy to wash and put in the dishwasher. I also love their whole line of flasks. They have handheld flasks and flasks that you can put into your pocket. Everything is so well made, and it's just really a solid product. Go to hydropack.com, use the code NATRUNSFAR10 to take 10% off. And now, let's get back to our conversation with Kate Gunderson.
Well, Okay, I wasn't much of a runner when I lived in Fargo, so that's hard. So I can't talk much to that. I do run when I'm home, like for Christmas or... See, that's the thing about North Dakota that's hard, is it's very hard to run there in the winter because of the ice and snow. This year was very mild, so I was able to run outside. But yeah, it can be challenging. So Mojave area, I would never suggest somebody run in Mojave. It's not a safe place to run. However, there's a little town.
Why is that? Wait. Oh, that's why is it not very safe? I never knew that.
Well, I've just heard of people being very close call to shootings and stuff like that. Just some crime. Wow. However, I did run. I got to run on the runway. So Mojave is like a 10,000 foot runway, and I got to run on the runway for a 5K. That was cool. But there's a little town. I don't think you've probably ever heard of it, but 25 minutes northwest, is where I used to live when I first moved here. It's called Tehachapi. And on the way up to Tehachapi is this really cool windmill farm, like wind turbine farm. Mm-hmm. So if you think about the huge wind producing farms, you can actually run on the PCT up through those windmills. And I just hiked it this weekend, but that I'm not much of a trail runner, but I got convinced by my friends, and it is absolutely beautiful to run on the PCT up by the windmills.
That sounds incredible. Yeah. Okay. I would have never thought of that.
You guys need to do it.
Let's go.
Yeah, let's do that.
So we're running into Tehachapi windmills on the PCT. Yeah.
What did you say? The PC
Pacific Crest Trail. Yeah.
Oh, the Pacific Crest Trail.
Yeah, PCT.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Okay. I'm all in. I want to do that.
How far did you go? What was it? Was it straight uphill? What tell us all about it?
Well, yeah, I've got roped into the trail run, like I said, but so it's funny. I've run on it a few times, but one of the times my friends were like, they're major trail runners, and those people, you know, they're another breed if you ask me.
Yes.
But they were like, okay, we're going to go for like, I was like, oh, I need to get 6 miles today. Okay, we're going to go. So I like didn't really eat. And like, we show up and they're like, actually, I think we're going to run 12 today. And I'm like, what? Which.
That's double than what I was planning.
Uh-huh. So anyway, we went and it was fun, but we got all the way up. It can be pretty steep in parts, but we got to like a certain part where there was actually snow because we were so high up. But it was just, it's beautiful. Like I'm never mad when I end up doing it because it's always faster coming down. So, you know, can't complain.
So now if you're going to meet your friends to go and run into Tehachapi, how long would that take from where you live to drive?
Now it would probably be, well, Tehachapi is like about 40 minutes away. The actual like Pacific Crest Trail where we, I hiked with school, some people from school last weekend. And that was about 25 minutes. So it's not really too far.
So that would be a great place for people either visiting the area or living in California who want to go somewhere totally different to go on a run.
Yeah. Or if they're like on the way to, you know, like LA people, I think they have to go through there on the 14 to go to like Big Bear or Mammoth. I'm not sure if you have to go through there, but I think so.
Yeah.
That sounds like a mammoth route.
It does, because we always see the wind. Is that like when we go and we always see the windmills? But or maybe that's a different.
It probably is. I don't know.
It could be.
Yeah.
Do you go through Mojave?
We go.
You're thinking of going to Palm Springs. That's where I know we see
windmills. Oh, I've yes.
I've seen them.
Yeah, in Palm Springs.
Yeah, they're really cool. It's like they're very dramatic. I always want to just stop and like stare at them.
I think they're, even though they're like man-made, they're so beautiful because they're kind of like, they make it feel futuristic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's a cool place to run. Okay, Tehachapi, we will put this in the show notes for people to go. Pacific Coast Trail.
Pacific Crest Trail, yeah.
Crest. Why am I cannot get it right?
You're thinking of Pacific
Crest. I'm taking a PCH.
PCH. Yeah, right.
I'm like, I know what the Pacific Crest Trail is, but I can't seem to articulate that. Okay. So, Kate, let's talk about food in your area and like, from a runner's perspective.
Oh, well, in the town I live in, there's not much but a Starbucks. But I'm trying to think. So Tehachapi, so that's after we went hiking this last weekend. We went to Tehachapi, has a great German bakery that people come from all over to go to. They're open every day except for Wednesday and Thursday. And they make fresh breads, especially the sourdough is really good. And it's called, I always get this wrong, it's called Kane Conan's. Conan's German bakery. And they have all kinds of fresh pastries and stuff. So it's really good. Really good soup and sandwiches. And then, yeah, I think if you were going to go run the Pacific Crest Trail, you'd go do that. And then you'd drive another like 15, 20 minutes and go to that bakery. I think it would make for a
Sounds really
good
good.
weekend. Yeah. And I know a lot of people love Tehachapi because it's in the mountains. So you're at 4,000 feet and it's really pretty clean air if you're trying to get out of LA and all that.
Now, is that enough? If you stayed there long enough, you'd get some aerobic benefit, or is it like, eh, it's not that bad?
I don't know, but I'm gonna say this and hope I don't sound condescending, but when I ran Boston the first time, I thought it was quote unquote easy. Probably I just needed to push myself harder, but I think the training in the mountains really helped me. I think it probably takes, a good couple months, but it really did benefit me. And then the other great thing in Tehachapi, once you're done with all that, you can go and there's a bunch of wineries too. So yeah.
Oh, I did not know
Okay.
that. Okay. Like, it's amazing how huge California
Oh, I
is.
know.
Like, you can be in like you can feel like you're in a series of different
Oh,
states
yeah.
within the whole great state of California. It's like unbelievable.
Yep.
Okay, wineries, a great bakery in
Bakery.
Tehachapi, any place for like if people want to grab dinner, what'd you
Yeah, there's a
say?
really good Thai place. It's called Thai Hachapi.
I
No way.
love it. That's awesome.
There's a little movie theater, and then there's right next door to that. It's a very small town. I think it's like 3,000. Is it 3,000? I don't know. But and then it has a like an Italian restaurant right on the main drag as well. So you can take your pick, but lots of good, cute little restaurants and stuff like that.
Nice.
Okay.
Okay. I'm learning something new
Yeah.
here.
Now, are you remote enough where it's if you need some running gear, it's strictly Amazon, or is there a running,
That's a fun. Yeah.
know,
I just left.
I don't maybe not a a boutique running store, but maybe like, the mountaineering store that happens to have a good selection of running shoes. I don't know.
I'm always buying online because yeah, there's I was just looking online the other day on the Facebook group for the like so Palmdale Lancaster has like a little running club that I just went to for the first time this week, and people were asking about running stores. There is not a running store within like probably 100 miles of me, I would say.
Oh
So
my
you're either going to
God.
Bakersfield or down to Santa Clarita, I think they said has one running store. So that's like all
That's
I've got,
crazy.
unless you go to like a sports store. So I'm ordering online.
Got
Okay.
it. Okay, so for people listening, just so we can kind of give them a visual layout. So you're in Mojave. Is it called Mojave or Mojave Desert,
No,
California?
so school is Mojave, yeah. I live in a town near there.
Okay.
So but we're yeah, like you're trying to figure out like where we are in comparison to like where LA or something or
Well, LA, and then you were saying like Palmdale,
Oh.
Lancaster, then we have Tehachapi, Santa Clarita.
Okay. Yeah,
So,
I'll draw a
yeah.
little visual. So, Mojave is like, let's say Mojave's in the middle. You go north, west from there, 25 minutes to Tehachapi. Then you go a
Okay.
whole nother like 45 minutes to an hour. I don't know what direction. Northeast, maybe north from Tehachapi, and you're in Bakersfield. So
Yeah, okay.
that's far. And then so school, okay, back to Mojave in the middle. Then you go like 20 minutes south-ish, and that's where I live. And then you go another like 20 more minutes south-ish, and you're in like Lancaster, Palmdale. And then go farther south, another like so from where I live, maybe an hour, and you get to Santa Clarita. So just like
Okay.
everything is so spread out compared to when I like Houston is a spread out city, but like I lived in the like near downtown, tons of stuff to do, and now it's like everything's so far away. So,
oh yeah, it's so spread out. Now I want to know, what does your running look like in the summer? Because it gets hot in Mojave, in that surrounding area, Palmdale, Lancaster. Yeah. Oh my gosh,
blueberry!
It's like a totally different world.
Yeah. So that's when I was talking about North Dakota gets cold. Well, this is a whole nother extreme because it gets so dang hot. Like, even at school, when we're flying twice a day and it's 110 degrees, maybe, it's just like unbelievably hot and you're exhausted. So I try to still run in the mornings. There were times in the summer when I was in class and I had to run in the afternoon and it was just unbelievably horrible. Like, you cannot keep your heart rate down. You just don't feel well. So I just do my best to hydrate and then slow it down. I really don't have an ego about my pace. So I'm like, whatever, it's how I feel. If I don't feel well, I'll just slow it down. And I try to still get the mileage in, but I slow it down.
That's a great, you have to, because it's got to be by effort. It gets so, I mean, it's like well into the triple digits.
It can
be. Right? Easy. In the summer.
But the thing is, compared to Houston, in some ways it's better because it's not so humid. So that dry heat is a little better. But I don't know. I feel like it's still like super easy to get overheated and to get dehydrated and that kind of thing. So you really have to pay attention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about races? Have you done any races around that area?
Other than that 5K, other than CIM, I don't think so. And that wasn't the area, because that's like, what, 5 hours away. But I should do something. I'm not like really a fan of 5Ks. I feel like they're not long enough for me. I should look into like a half marathon or something. I think that would be good, but I haven't yet.
Yeah.
There's probably some crazy race in the desert, you know, out there with the, you know, there's a whole group of desert people, like Badwater folk that just go nuts.
Well, so I want
maybe there's some
Death Valley.
Yes.
Oh yeah. Well, I would love to do like the LA Marathon or something. You know, it would be fun to do something like that. Or I've heard there are a lot of great races in California. Like, isn't there like a roads to mountains to beaches? Is that one?
Mountains to beach. Okay. You have to come and do that. It is such a beautiful race. It starts in Ojai and you go to Ventura.
Okay.
That's a great one. Yeah.
What other ones do you recommend?
Mountains to Beach is great. The Ventura is the half marathon and the marathon. That's in February, at the end of February. That's a really good one as well. You know, obviously there's always the LA Marathon. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of races in Orange County. I mean, of course, you know, I think no matter what, you're going to be traveling. Oh, I have not done this, but there's the Santa Rosa half marathon and marathon in Santa Rosa at the end of August.
Yeah, so now it's back way back north. But
Way back north. What would be closer to Kate?
You've got the Rose Bowl half?
Oh.
We just had that this past weekend.
I know was like announcing for it. It was pretty cool.
No way. That would have been cool. That's not that far. That's like, that's Pasadena. That's hour and a half. Hour 45?
Yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah.
So you can do it next year.
There you go.
It's really fun too, because you finish on the 50-yard line in the stadium. The
Rose Bowl, that's cool. That's really cool.
So, okay, I just thought about something. We did not ask you if people were coming or were coming, where do we stay? Do we camp out in the desert?
So when I moved, when I was looking for housing in Tehachapi, there were these cute little like mini, like little tiny homes being built. And I was like, those look so cool. I walked up to one of them. It was under construction. And there's a man like outside, like that looked like a construction worker. So I said, what's going on here? What's the deal with these houses? I'm looking for some place to live. And so he gave me the builder's phone number and I called him and he was like, yeah, no, these are Airbnbs. Like, I'm not trying to rent these out. So there are these cute little mini houses, like little two-story things in the downtown area of Tehachapi. I would definitely stay there, but there are tons of hotels and they're all like, if you're trying to go to the wineries or something, or that running on the Pacific Crest Trail, they're all like 15, 20 minutes, you know, it's super easy. So yeah, definitely stay in Tehachapi and get the mountain views, or find an Airbnb that's like out in the mountains or something.
Okay, nice. I am sold on this. Like, yeah, I have lived in California for so long and have never explored Tehachapi and all of that, what you've, you know, shared with us. This is incredible.
Yeah, you need to go.
I'm so excited. You gotta go make a weekend of this.
That is a weekend. As long as we can stay in a tiny home.
Yeah.
We gotta do it.
That's so fun. So you are amazing, Kate. I'm just like, I'm just enamored and like with your career and like you're running the Fargo Marathon. I can't wait to track you with your training and the race and everything. This is so awesome. What would you say, the last question I have for you before we ask the very last question is, if there's like a teenager or a kid out there listening who's like loves STEM or, you know, flight and pilot and all of that world, mm-hmm. What advice would you give them to make their way into the field?
Something that my dad told me when I started right before I started grad school, I was having imposter syndrome. So that's the, you know, the idea that it's only a matter of time until someone figures out you're not smart enough to be where you are. And I remember telling him, I don't know why people think I'm so smart. I'm not that smart. I just work really hard. And my dad looked me in the face and I'll never forget it. He said, Kate, being smart and working hard are the same thing. And I realized at that moment that if you're willing to work hard about the things that you're passionate about, no dream you ever have will ever be out of reach because you have that, you know, you have that. I don't know what else I was going to say because I just.
Hey, you know what?
That's solid, man. That's golden.
Yeah, mic drop to dad. That's it. That's all we need to know.
I know what I was gonna say. So, you know, the going through the process of schooling for engineering is so challenging, and if you're like me, you might suffer from imposter syndrome. You might have times where you need to take a class a second time because it's so challenging. But I always try to remind myself that the reason it is challenging because engineers and scientists are tasked with solving some of the world's most challenging problems. So the schooling has to be hard because it teaches you how to think critically and to solve the challenging problems. So I think that's like one of the things that I would recommend is like, don't be discouraged by the things that are challenging because they're challenging for a reason.
I love that because our daughter, our older daughter is very much into STEM. Mm-hmm. And there were periods of time where she wanted to be an engineer, like buildings, mm-hmm. right? Structural engineer. And, you know, you'd find areas of life where she might want to cut some corners or kind of, and I go, look, if this is the way you're going to do your buildings, I'm not coming into anything you build because I'm not stepping foot in any building that you make. If this is the way you make your bed is the way you make in buildings, I'm not in.
That's nope, good. I'm not coming in.
So I will make sure she hears this.
Yes.
It's challenging for a reason. Yeah. You're doing things that humans depend on.
Mm-hmm. So now were you a strong math student?
I think I was, but I always felt as though I had to put in more effort than everybody else. And I think that's something that's important to remember is you don't have to be naturally good at engineering or math or science. And that's why I talk about, you know, the astronaut thing, like being passionate about what you're doing is so much more important than being naturally gifted at it, because if you have passion, you're going to succeed. So I think it was I always knew what I wanted to do and I knew what steps I needed to take to get there. So it made it so much easier for me to put the hard work in. So whenever math, maybe I think, yeah, I was good at it, but it wasn't like I wasn't inherently good, like naturally gifted. I had to work really hard at it. So
this is so good for people to hear that. It's such good advice. Cause I mean, I feel like sometimes people, you know, we all feel like, well, whether it's with your running or math or career, if it's like you're not just like hit the ball out of the park every on the time. First go round, that's like, oh, maybe that's not for me. Yeah. It's like, well, no, maybe it's just you need to like look at it a different way mm-hmm. or approach it a different way, or you have to work a little harder in this particular area. So
it's all a process.
I agree. Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. The one question we always have to know is, if you could run anywhere in the world, where would it be and why?
Oh, man, I've never thought about this before. That's one of my favorite things about running, though. It's an opportunity to see a new place. The one place I want to go the most, that I've always wanted to go, is Greece. I don't necessarily know what the running is like there, but I would love to run there. But I just think, you know, I guess what originally fascinated me with Greece was that my grandpa was an expert on Alexander the Great, and he did a sabbatical in Greece when, I think it was before I was born, or maybe I was really little, but they lived in Greece for like a while. And I just always thought the history was fascinating, and the fact that my grandparents had lived there was really neat. And I've always wanted to go. So.
Oh, and that's got, reasons. There's so many, I mean,
the views,
I don't know. There's like a lot of good stuff in Greece, and like a lot of, what do I want to say?
There's history, the and history. Culture around running and life and.
Well, the, yeah, the running. So yeah. Much. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I'm all for it.
Great answer.
Let's all meet in Greece and go on a run.
I would love it. Sounds
good. Maybe Tehachapi first and then Greece.
We'll save up for Greece, yeah.
Exactly. All right, Kate, where can everybody find you so we can follow along with all the amazing things that you're doing?
So I'm most active on Instagram. You already said it's the Plain Kate, plain spelled like an airplane. And then I have a website. Well, actually on all my socials, I'm the Plain Kate. So Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, now X, and LinkedIn, and all that, whatever. Or not LinkedIn, whatever. All the socials. And then okay. And then my website is www.caitlingunderson.com.
Awesome. Everybody, we'll put all this in the show notes so you can follow along with Kate and her really very like interesting, cool career, as well as your running journey. You're going to inspire and are inspiring so many people, including us. So thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah, well, thank you. It was so much fun. It was a lot of fun. Yeah, thank you so much.
Cool.
All right. Well
go to bed so you can wake up at 4. I know.
Kate Gunderson, that was a ton of fun. Thanks so much for coming on the show. It was so interesting to learn about your demanding career in aerospace and how you're balancing it all to achieve your running goals. Thank you for all the do's and the few don'ts for running in the high desert. We're looking forward to joining you in Tehachapi and logging a few miles. For women in STEM, women in aerospace, and awesome female athlete, check out The Plain Kate on Instagram.
Okay, do you guys want to know how you can show the biggest appreciation for all these amazing guests that we're bringing to you guys on the Sweet Run podcast? I will tell you. Go to Apple Podcasts, take 20 to 40 seconds, that's it, leave a rating, and then if you could write a written review about why you are loving or liking the show, that would be incredible, and it would help new listeners find our show, help these guests get their stories out into the world. That would be fantastic. All right, you can also find us on social media. For Sweet Run, you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, you can find us on YouTube, and share the show. Share it on social media. Tell your friends about it so we can get this out in 2024 to as many people and grow this show in 2024. For me, Nat Runs Far, you can find me on all social media, everywhere, all the time, at Nat Runs Far. You guys are awesome. Keep running every day. Keep believing in yourself. We love you, and we will see you next week.